Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello, folks, and welcome to the A to Z Sports Big Orange Podcast. I am Charlie Burris. That is Zach Reagan. Wherever you listen throughout the world, we thank you so much for listening to us. Zach and I talk everything balls every week here on the Big Orange Podcast. If that's something that you want to listen to on the regular, go over to the A to Z Sports Podcast Network feed on Apple or Spotify. When you get there, rate, review, but most importantly, subscribe. If you do subscribe, you won't miss our shows when we drop them on Mondays. And speaking of Mondays, it is one right now at 7 p.m. Eastern time, and that means that we are live on YouTube, and you can join us there. Hit the subscribe button on YouTube, A to Z Sports National YouTube channel. Subscribe button, but the notification bell, if you hit that, you'll be notified when we go live on here. And then you can join us, be a part of the show, comment, come hang out. We love going back and forth with everybody. It's always a great time. So do that. At Charlie underscore Burris, at Zach TNT, at A to Z Sports, A to Z, Facebook.com/A to Z Sports Nashville, and A to Z Sports.com for all the stuff that Zach writes. All right. As I said, it's Monday at 7 p.m., and we just watched, moments ago, the Lady Vols in the NCAA tournament. They were eliminated by NC State. We might talk about this a little more like near the end of the show, although we already kind of gave our take, a week or two ago about Kelly Harper. I don't want to say mercifully that was the end of the season, but boy, they were down by 20, came back, got it down to 2-point game, and then ultimately lost again. Were you watching that, Zach?
No, I saw some of the highlights. I had a lot going on this afternoon, but losing to your former employer that fired you is never a good look. So it's going to be a tough one for her to recover from, I think. But we'll see what happens this offseason. I feel like the next week or so, that's probably going to be a pretty big topic if anything happens at all there.
Yeah, like I said, I think we're going to have to talk about it. A lot of people probably know what my opinion is there, but
you've never been one for keeping a coach just to see, just give him one more year. No,
we gotta let her figure it out. Let her figure it out. The year six, that'll be the year. Finally, yeah. Without Rekia Jackson. Yeah. Year six will be the one. Of course, today we're going to talk about the men's team, which unlike the women's team made it to the Sweet 16, in a game that I would describe as brutally painful and yet joyous because you made it to the Sweet 16. You beat Texas. It was a slog to watch.
It was the basketball equivalent of the football game against Texas A&M last year. That's
yes. You could score more and somehow you just never could. It's rough. But then little spring ball, obviously spring practice continues on. We had some interviews today with players and coaches. Maybe a little baseball sprinkled in, maybe a little Lady Vols. We're going to talk about it. All the news train for the Vols never stops. We'll discuss everything right after I tell you about the great folks at Zen Sports. We've been telling you about these guys all season long. It's the new sports betting app exclusively in Tennessee. And when you sign up for a Zen Sports account, you'll receive up to a $1,000 no danger first wager. That's right. When you place your first bet on Zen Sports, you're going to be reimbursed for the amount of your bet up to a $1,000 maximum if that bet loses. But there's even more good news. Zen Sports is rolling out their brand new VIP rewards program. And with the VIP rewards program,
Top tier customers can earn more bonuses, comps, and perks, but it is by invite only. So if you feel your Zen Sports play qualifies for VIP consideration, check out the program at zensports.com/VIP. No other sportsbook will offer you a premier sports betting experience with 24/7 top tier customer support and faster withdrawals like Zen Sports. What are you waiting for? Get going and download their app at zensports.com today. Zen Sports betting just got better. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older in Tennessee to bet. That is Zen Sports. Big thank you to them, our very gracious betting partner. All right. Tennessee faced off against Texas in the round of 32. Texas was a 7 seed coming in, coached by Rodney Terry, who was a disciple of Rick Barnes. This matchup, I think we all knew going in, Texas was going to drag this thing down at the mud. We didn't really talk about it last week because it was actually before Tennessee even played their first round game. We were kind of talking last week about like, oh, you're playing the team that knocked off Kentucky. Well, Tennessee ended up beating them by 40. And it was, you know, an absolute snoozer in a good way. You know, you're obviously always happy about that. And then Kentucky lost in the first round again, which was awesome. Awesome. But that's neither here nor there. You go on to face Texas. Ultimately, for the entire set of teams that were playing in that second round, Tennessee had one of the harder draws here. You had Alabama playing Grand Canyon University, and you know some other teams playing freaking snoozers. I forget who got to play the team that beat Kentucky, but that
NC
ended
State.
Up being,
NC State.
And, yeah, it was NC State. That ended up being a great game. Went to overtime. NC State, the only double-digit seed to make it to the Sweet 16 this year, but Tennessee gets the draw against Texas. And when I say, oh, I mean, just one of the most painful victories in the history of Tennessee sports that I've watched, where you were just clenching your teeth, just going, how is this even real? 1-for-22 from three. What are we doing? You watch that entire game. And it was so obvious the entire time. You were only up by 9 at halftime. But you saw that and you were like, we could be up by 25 right now. Like, what are we doing? We're only up by 9. And then Texas got all the way back down to a 2-point game right near the end. I mean, absolutely ridiculous. Tennessee let them all the way back in. And, of course, at that point, you're going, we should be up by 40. If we could hit open shots and not be 1-for-22 from 3, oh, my goodness. This thing would be so over, but it wasn't. But ultimately, Tennessee does pull it out. We'll talk about kind of the intricacies here, but what do you think of that game, Zach?
Yeah, I thought it was, I compared it to the Texas A&M game there, but when we came on, but it was almost more like that Kentucky football game last year where I felt, and when it got to 2, I was a little nervous, like, okay, are they really going to lose this game? But for the most part, it's like you said, like they should be up by a lot more than they are. I feel like they're going to win, but what? What is this? I mean, how is this happening type deal? Fortunately, I mean, none of the shots, like you said, were going in. But then, ironically, they hit their free throws at the end of the game to kind of put the game away for once. I mean, we've seen Tennessee lose games like that in the past. So that was at least kind of like maybe the silver lining there. It feels like this team, I mean, the St. Peter's game notwithstanding, it's a 15 seed. You know, you can't really take away much from that. Just feels like their shooting has just been like they're pressing. I think we kind of said that before with like Dalton Connect. Like, just can they continue to be this cold? Because it feels like you've got to the Sweet 16, you've made it this far, not really playing your best basketball the last, I don't know, since the middle or, you know, second week of March, really. You kind of that Kentucky game on hasn't felt like the best version of Tennessee. And yet here you are, 2 games away from the Final Four. At some point, you got to think that that team that we saw at times there at the end of February and the beginning of March is going to come back around, and maybe the Sweet 16 against Creighton is when that happens. But I feel like there's a lot. I mean, you can be negative with a lot of that game, the Texas game, just because of how it went. But at the same time, you're still playing. You found a way to win that game against a team that's capable of beating you if you don't play well, obviously. I think you still got to feel good about where Tennessee's at. I mean, you got to turn things around. I don't think you can play that way against Creighton and expect to stay within 10, probably. I mean, you're going to lose if you play that way, but they're still here. We know what they can do. They haven't forgot how to be that team. that they got the guys, they got the dudes. Let's see them turn it on this weekend. I do think that it's worth pointing out Zakai Ziegler. I mean, playing 40 minutes in that game, what kind of an interesting subplot there. I mean, that's tough. And coming back, I know he's a year removed from the ACL injury, but really just the way he's battled back in general to come back, missing the tournament last year, giving it his all in this game, even though he only went by four, that's a huge thing, I think.
There was a lot to unpack here because it was – even just when the game ended, it was so many different emotions because it was relief. And, you know, your blood pressure still on the roof. And you're just like, oh, thank God, it's over. But then at the same time, I mean, I was totally joyous. It's so great. Getting to a Sweet 16, man, don't ever take that for granted. Tennessee is not Gonzaga. 9 in a row or whatever Gonzaga's streak is right now. It's, you know, one of the longest ever.
Yeah, the only SEC team standing. I mean,
well, Alabama.
Oh yeah, Alabama. That's right.
Grand Canyon.
Yeah,
freaking Alabama. Mm. Got to play Grand Canyon.
They get Carolina UNC next, though, right?
They do. Yes. Okay. And so yeah. Hopefully, I won't lie. I will be backing the Tar Heels in that one. Not gonna lie, folks. That's how much I dislike Alabama. But
there's no need for conference pride. No, none of that here.
No, Tennessee or bust. The rest of the SEC can kiss it, and they did. They did kiss it. But with that game, I mean, I was super joyous, and don't take for granted making a Sweet 16. It's really awesome. At the same time, as you said, no doubt, this team is just not gelling exactly correctly, and it hasn't been kind of for a little bit here. Obviously that Kentucky game was funky. Then you got that Mississippi State game. And now you're staring down the barrel of like, okay, let's wake up. Cause now you're going to play a team that they don't run like Bama, but they put up shots like Bama. I would put it that way. And I've kind of in our text back and forth, I've been comparing them to that Bama game. And you know, you're not going to have to sprint it out constantly like you do against a Nate Oates team. But they do just take shot after shot after shot after shot.
That can be your worst nightmare in the tournament because we've seen, and I mean, that was what did Kentucky in. One, their effort was not, if you watch that game, Kentucky's effort was not
defense
good
was so
at
bad.
All. But still, the kid for Oakland was unconscious, hitting, 10 threes, 32 points. I mean, he's a future insurance agent somewhere, and he's always going to have that story of lighting up Kentucky. But that is your worst nightmare, is a team throwing up shots and they get hot, because that's tough in the tournament. That is tough to come back from.
Yes. And Creighton is so perfectly built. You know, we thought we were avoiding it by not playing Purdue until the Elite Eight. But realistically, Purdue is like the, I can't believe we got lit up by that dude team. I mean, they got Shireman. Well, obviously, first off, defensive player of the year in the Big East, Ryan Kalkbrenner. And then Shireman and who's the little guy? He had 20 points against Oregon. And I literally texted y'all and I said, this is the guy. This is going to be the guy that lights Tennessee up. It's, oh, crap, what's his last name? Because he's a little deeper on the team. Well, I can't think of it. But they have all of these shooters. I should have had this right in front of me, and I don't. Here we go.
Yeah, I'm zero help on this.
I'm gonna look through. I just can't rattle. I mean, it's Creighton. I can't rattle them all off. Like this, Stephen Ashworth. That's who it was. Stephen Ashworth. He's a little baby faced white dude, and you're just like, oh yeah, that's the guy. That's the one that's gonna drop 30 on us. but no, they're really good. Really good. And you know, Trey Alexander is one of the best players in the Big East, and he had 20 in that game. I'm looking at it now. Ashworth had 21. Shireman had 18. Alexander had 20. Kalkbrenner had 19. Now they have a pretty short bench.
Yeah, it sounds like not a lot of depth. That's a lot of starters that are having to produce there.
Yes. At the same time, I mean, clearly Rick is kind of going, hey, we're consolidating here, playing Zakai for 40 full minutes there.
Speaking of that, I want to get, like, since we're in this playing time thing, because I think this is maybe part of the discussion on what's happening lately, What do you think of Vescovy's minutes at this point? Because it really feels like you're not, the facilitating's not there, the scoring's not there. We've talked about kind of being timid. Is that the right move right now, giving him 20, 25 minutes a game?
I just look at it and go, who else? Who are you going to put in that spot? Because it's, you know.
I mean, you give more minutes to Meshack. Is that a situation? Maybe. I mean, I don't.
Maybe. It would be a little bit of a philosophy change, though, because Rick is just always, he really likes those senior guys, the leaders, and obviously defense. I mean, defense is just so huge there. Guys that play fundamentally sound, and Scobie does. He doesn't make mistakes, really. He just misses shots. He's a brick machine this season, although he misses shots or he just doesn't take them, gets wide open looks and doesn't shoot, but he still, I mean, he is now, as of that game against Texas, the all-time steals leader at Tennessee. He had 3 steals in that game. Texas turned the ball over incessantly in that one, 17 turnovers, if I'm thinking correctly. Hey, he's giving you killer defensive minutes. And then maybe, like in that St. Peter's game, he'll drop in a few shots. Yeah. And he can get to the line, and he can be a pretty effective free throw shooter, one of the better guys that you got at the free throw line. So I just am perpetually unimpressed by Jordan Gainey, although he put in a good effort in that game, specifically on the defensive end. But he still is just, he's jacking up shots. He's too confident. Scobie's not confident enough. Gainey's too confident. Meshack, his defense is unreal at every single turn, but he can't score the basketball. It's, you just don't have that exact correct guy for that spot, you know? And I'm not sure exactly where you go. Meshack does seem like that would be kind of be the option, because you got good minutes out of Triple J in that game, out of Josiah Jordan James. He hit just an incredibly clutch three there. Finally took the lid off the basket for Tennessee. Was Connect first, or was he first finally making a three again? Might've been Connect.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But he also made one of those clutch threes, played excellent defense.
Like I said, as bad as Connect was shooting the ball, or not really bad, it wasn't great. He did hit some key free throws, and that's kind of been his bugaboo, is from the free throw line at times, and he was able to come up clutch and hit, I think, 7 out of 8. So even when he didn't have his best game, he was still able to ice it there at the end and kind of be the closer there, even though it's not the way that we've kind of come to know him as a closer.
Well, we can go on all day about how the offense is funky right now, but what gives me hope here and kind of like butterflies my stomach, like, okay, this might still be different, because we've said it all season long. This just feels like a different team from what Rick has had in the past. And it definitely has been, obviously SEC champions in the regular season. And they have, you know, arguably the best score in all college basketball, and just everything that we've said. But you look at the end of this game, and we said all season, free throw shooting, free throw shooting, free throw shooting. Oh, boy. Like that. We know that's going to bite us in the tournament. And it came down to free throws in this one, and they made them all. I guess you had 8. Adu made 3 of 4 important ones. But specifically,
he made his last 2, I think.
The final 2 were the biggest, and in such a huge spot. And, you know, Heat, Connect, who's been bad at the free throw line relative to him as a player, been bad at the free throw line all season. and when it mattered, because I was really feeling like coming down the stretch in that game, especially if Tennessee had ended up losing, Connect had a bunch of, not straight up bunnies, but like shots that he had just made all season,
like those 15 footers from the free throw line, kind of,
right there at the elbow. And you just, he was 100% on that shot earlier in the year, and he's bricking those. And I had actually texted some friends of mine, and I said, wow, maybe Connect's not the guy, because this is when it matters. He's not making the shot. I was like, this is what we built up all season long, was like, oh, he can finally be the dude that makes the shot in the big moment in the tournament when you actually need it. And he's not doing it. He's doing the exact opposite, in fact. But then when it finally came down to it, Connect saw my text, and he said, I took that personally. And he stepped up to the line, and he made those shots when it mattered. And overall, I mean, it was a terrible performance for him. I don't want to be hyperbolic there, but relative to what he can do, a dude that's averaged almost 30 points in conference play per game. That was the struggle bus all game long. And almost everybody stunk. Almost everybody on Texas's team stunk too. Pretty much everybody. They needed a big game out of Disu. He was terrible. And you know, they just really, that game was ugly from start to finish, really horrendous. But when it mattered, Tennessee made the plays they had to have. Let's look. There's a bunch of comments, and we haven't been getting to them, and I want to. Billy Jones says, go Big Orange, GBO. Jared said, UT fans have to be the most stressed people on earth. Absolutely. Craig's being a total hater. He says, I can't believe regular season Rick is still alive in the NCAA tournament. Craig, take a chill pill. Will says, go Big Orange, I'll censor. Billy Jones, Ziegler took over the games at time on defense. He was big. Absolutely pesky. You had Asmus. It was spelled A-B-M-A-S, but they kept pronouncing it Asmus. I don't know how that works with that kid. But absolutely, Zakai is he had a rough game. Also, offensively a rough game, 6 points, 7 assists. And there were some really big plays in there, but 4 turnovers and then 3 steals on that game. But when it matters, those guys, they stepped up and you won this game and you're moving on to the Sweet 16. And that is the thing that makes me think, okay, this really might be different, because you look historically just at Barnes' time here. And maybe not the Grant and Admiral. I did that the last time I said Grant Admiral. Grant and Admiral, not admirable. maybe not those Grant and Admiral teams. But every other team that Barnes has had, they would have lost that game. Without a doubt, they would have lost that game.
They definitely would have last year.
They would have melted down. They wouldn't have made the shots right at the end. They just wouldn't have been able to handle it when Texas made that run. And you did. And you used it. I mean, it was connect at the line, making the clutch free throws, and Adu, a guy who's been so important all season long, total X factor for you. And that's the whole thing. Now, does that translate into you can be Creighton, who's going to rain down threes on you potentially? I don't know. I'm not sure. But with before we move on to talking specifically about Creighton, anything else with the Texas game, Zach, you want to cover?
Yeah, I mean, not really. I think you got to maybe, and I'm not as familiar with Creighton as you are, obviously, but I think you got to kind of turn that in, like, into that Duke game in the tournament last season, where you just frustrate them, play physical, you know, get under their skin, make them hate you, make the national guys send tweets about how Tennessee plays dirty basketball. I don't know. Whatever it is you got to do to just kind of muck up that game and turn it into last year, because you don't want them to get in some sort of rhythm where they're just hitting threes and they go on a quick 9-0, 12-0 run, and suddenly you find yourself down by 10, 12 points in the first half, and it's like that Mississippi State game where you're playing from behind. And it's not when Tennessee's at their best. That's not who they are. They need to try to get out in front in this game and just, like I said, frustrate them. If you play elite defense like you can, feels like you should be on your way to the Elite Eight, because you're a better team than Creighton overall.
Yeah, you are better than Creighton. You're not going to get an argument out of me there. But Jason says in the comments, he said, I'm worried about the 7-foot guy for Creighton. He's a beast. Ryan Kalkbrenner is really good. He has the body, the mass, to push around Jonas Adu. At the same time, I think if you go with Adu and Awaka both, and Awaka can keep his head and not get 4 fouls in the first 5 minutes he's in the game, that could be the game right there to me. Because I 100% agree, this is the perfect opportunity to kind of have a game like you did against Duke last year, where just... this is probably going to be the most physical game they've played all season. Now, they got roughed up by Oregon. Oregon was a drag you down into the mud, just muck it up type of team, and they succeeded to the point where, if I'm thinking correctly, in regulation, if they would have, they missed a free throw that would have just won them the game, I think, essentially. I don't remember. there was a lot there at the end of that game. But they basically had Creighton beat very, I mean, within an inch of their life, Creighton nearly lost that game and then blew up in the second OT. And so I think if you can be physical with them, assert yourself early, specifically with the big guys. I mean, Adu is not going to get in there and push around Ryan Culper. He's not going to do it because he's not big enough. He's not assertive enough. He's not confident enough. Unless he pulls out a performance that we have not yet seen. I personally don't think that Adu can do that, but I think if you can have that duo in there, maybe Awaka comes in, and now Awaka could push around almost anybody. He's incredibly strong, and you can assert yourself there, establish the perimeter, have Connect actually make shots, because you're going to have to make shots in this one, period, point blank. As I said, it's in terms of the amount of threes that this team puts up and just the shots that they get up, it's kind of similar to Alabama, but they're not going to run like Alabama in the same way, thankfully. And so obviously you beat Alabama twice already this season. Alabama does not defend. Creighton does. Big East defender of the year in Kalkbrenner there on their team. And I feel good and I don't at the same time. It is on paper a good matchup for Tennessee.
That's the sweet 16. That's what I was saying. There are no guarantees at this point in the tournament. I think you mentioned like Adu and Awaka. They got to stay out of foul trouble, but I think really you got to flip that and you've got to go at the 7-footer. You've got to try to get him in early foul trouble. And I feel like that's something that teams just sometimes don't do enough. Drive. I mean, it might end up a couple of block shots early in the game where you come away with no points, no trip to the line. That's just part of the strategy there. But I think you've got to try to go at him and try to make him make a couple of plays, get two fouls early, then all of a sudden, okay, you're playing a big stretch of the first half without him in there. Quick foul in the second half. You know, I mean, we know how that story goes. We've seen it with Adu at times this season. So I think that's something that Tennessee needs to kind of strategize and try to do there. If you can take him out of the game a little bit early, that makes the path there a little bit easier.
Yes. That would be a complete game changer for Tennessee. I don't want to say for certain Tennessee will have a better shooting night, but I almost go, I don't know how it could be worse almost. 3 for 25 at 1.1 for 22, 12% from the 3-point, a statistical anomaly. I mean, there were some stats after that game that was like a team that shot less than 15% from three in the NCAA tournament was like 0-66 or something. In the past, I don't remember exactly what
Texas
it was.
Texas wasn't far from it, fortunately.
No. Well, and here's the truth about Texas in that game. They are talented. Texas is talented. They have a really, generally speaking, a talented roster. I think that coach is not good. Rodney Terry is not a good coach. And I think he'll probably be fired in a couple of years. And then just in general, they didn't gel. Not that it's eating gel either. Say what you want about that. But nothing. What offense were they playing? And I kind of said that about Alabama this year in the exact opposite way. I don't know why I'm talking about Alabama so much. Like, Alabama's roster wasn't really that good, but Nate Oates kind of coached them up, had them playing above their head at a lot of points during the season. And Texas is the exact opposite. Whatever the opposite of that is, just like, coaching is not good. Scheme is not good. Players are talented. And I'll say this, a couple of those guys could come play for Tennessee next year. Come on down. We're all in the SEC.
There will be
a fun little rivalry. Yeah. But with all that said, on paper, this matchup, I don't want to say favorable for Tennessee. That's probably a little generous. But it comes out in Tennessee's favor when I look at it. Tennessee, I believe, a 2.5-point favorite in Vegas. And I don't know what I think is going to happen. What do you think is going to happen, Zach? I'll throw it to you.
I don't know. If I had to bet, I mean, I probably will, but I would bet Tennessee to cover, but I don't feel good about it. Like, I don't think it's a slam dunk there by any means, just because if you play that same game that you played against Texas, it's going to be a loss. Like, you cannot play that type of game in the Sweet 16. You got away with it once. And I'm not saying I think Tennessee's going to play that type of game. I'm kind of like you. You cannot shoot that bad that many games in a row. I just don't feel like there's any way they could replicate that performance if they tried, to be honest, to miss that many three-pointers. So I don't think that kind of night's going to happen again. But is it a night like Kentucky, you know, or is it Mississippi State? I don't know. Like, that's the big question. And right now, I mean, they did play well against St. Peter's, and you could have been on upset alert there. We saw some close 15-2 games. We saw some upsets. It's the tournament. There's talent everywhere. They could have easily lost that game if they didn't play well. So you got to give them credit for at least playing well against St. Peter's. I don't think we should totally dismiss that performance. But you got to be that team against Creighton. You just cannot be the team you are against Texas. And that's the team we've seen more of the last couple of weeks. And that's what's concerning to me.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, everybody's been saying it, I feel like, after that game is, well, hopefully that's the bad game. Hopefully that's the one. And historically speaking, in teams that make deep runs in March, you're going to have a game like that. Generally speaking, you're not going to blow every team out. And, you know, weird stuff happens where just the ball bounces a certain way. And like, a guy who's a future financial planner drops 40 on you, like with Kentucky, you know, it just sometimes that stuff happens. And so here against Creighton, they have the future financial advisors that could drop 40 on you. They do. I'm sad to say, but I like this comment from Ben. He said, I think what you're describing that there's multiple paths for Tennessee to beat Creighton and only one for Creighton to beat Tennessee. It'll be a good game, but I think we have more options. I think that's probably right. We've kind of said this a lot this season. Tennessee can win in multiple ways. They've won in the drag you down to the mud games. They just did that against Texas. They've also won against the get out there and run. One at Kentucky, one at Alabama. They can win that way too. They can play powerful lockdown defense against teams with good perimeter shooters. They've done it. And I think Tennessee wins this game. Tennessee should win this game. This is not Purdue. You're not playing Purdue, who kind of has a similar setup, except with an even better big man, obviously, who is ultimately going to be the National Player of the Year, whether that's correct or not, I'll let you decide. But this isn't Purdue, but Creighton's good. They beat UConn. Creighton beat UConn earlier this year. And UConn's best team in America right now. It's beaten everybody's head in. So,
at least, I mean, I'm glad the conversation is on Creighton. Like, there is no looking ahead, right? There is no kind of like last season when the path was there. There is no looking past ahead to Purdue, it doesn't feel like. So maybe that's this team's focused. They have every reason to be focused and locked in on Creighton and nothing else. And ultimately, just hit your shots. Like you said earlier, that's what it's going to come down to. Yes. You got to hit your shots or this game could get, you know, ugly and you're on the wrong side of it.
Make wide open threes and you will give yourself a very good chance to beat Creighton. And yes, if you, I think Billy Bob kind of set it up here. If you have a shooting night like you just did, not only are you going home like Billy Bob says, but you're going to get blown out of the building if you have a shooting night like that. And unless you have a miraculous defensive performance, because Creighton is going to get theirs in this one. They have all season long. They're good enough to do that. At the same time, I mean, they lost to Providence twice. They beat UConn. They lost to Providence twice. Providence, coached by Rick Barnes, former Rick Barnes assistant Kim English, of course. So I am not confident. I am with the line in Vegas. Tennessee by 2.5. I'm like, that's probably about right. Yeah. I don't mind that. We'll take that. That's how I'm feeling. I mean, I don't have a score prediction for you. If Tennessee's going to win, I think it's going to be 85-80, something like that. And you win it. You pull away a little bit on free throws at the end. We'll see. We'll see what happens there. Anything else with basketball, Zach, before we move on to a little bit of spring ball?
Yeah, I think that pretty much covers it. We'll just be crossing our fingers late super late Friday night. And if you know how Tennessee sports go, you know that Purdue-Gonzaga game will probably go to double overtime, and it will be 11 o'clock before Tennessee tips off on Friday night.
We were literally making plans. Tennessee won that game. We're like, oh, hey, let's hang out. And on Friday night, we'll make a night of it. And then the game time came out, and we were like, well, never mind.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we can still hang out if you want to be at my house.
I don't understand that. The first round of the NCAA tournament, your games are starting at 12 p.m. on Thursday and Friday. It's the greatest two days of basketball. And then you shift it to that Purdue-Gonzaga game starts at 7:39 when there's no game before it that has to be played. You could start that game at 6 o'clock and 8:30, 9 o'clock at the latest you're starting, which is, I mean, we see games at 9 o'clock all season long. That would be perfectly fine on a Friday night. But no, it's got to be 10:30-ish. So, yeah.
It is so dumb.
Complaint there, yeah.
So
dumb. Joe Lunardi won't even be able to stay up and watch it.
Oh, Lenardi's going to be fast asleep. Make no mistake about that. Oh, we'll see what happens. Say your prayers, everybody. That's kind of a complete other conversation, but like, you know, what it would mean in two ways, what it would mean for Rick to make an Elite Eight. Obviously, I've already said it. If he makes an Elite Eight here, he's the greatest coach Tennessee's ever had. And if he doesn't, I mean, you made a Sweet 16, but at the same time, you've disappointed yet again. You lost. It's not like losing to FAU last year, but you would have lost to a team that you were better than, generally speaking, during the season. So just win, baby. Just win. It's 1 point. That's all it takes. I don't care if it's 89-88, as long as Tennessee is the one in the lead when the clock hits zero. We shall see. Okay. Now let's talk a little bit of Tennessee football. Josh Heupel, Nico talked today. Going to discuss that. And also Glenn Ellerbe spoke about the offensive line. Let's discuss it right after I tell you. Well, Farm Bureau Health Plans. Farm Bureau Health Plans has been serving Tennesseans for over 75 years. Much has changed in Tennessee over the years, but some have stayed the same. Farm Bureau has always valued personal relationships, especially when it comes to good health and good service. Plan on Farm Bureau Health Plans for health, dental, and vision. For better coverage, better rates, and better service, go to fbhp.com/ATOZ or walk into one of their 200-plus locations across the state. That is fbhp.com/ATOZ, Farm Bureau Health Plans. Big thank you to them as always. Now, Zach, we've had a week of spring practice, and you know that first week you're always kind of getting into the groove of things, getting back, feeling it out. We haven't seen a ton. There's been some hype clips that have come out. Of Nico, some of these new wide receivers. So just fun stuff that's happened. But on the whole, as of right now, I think the as lame as this might sound, the press conferences are kind of the most notable part out of all of this, because sometimes you get kind of nuggets dropped in those press conferences. If a coach does his job correctly, we don't hear anything, and it's nothing. But there was a little bit today that we wanted to discuss. What do we hear today, Zach?
Yeah, it was kind of like every day with the media, there's certain kind of position groups or sections of players that talk. We've seen some defensive players, some newcomers. Today you had the offensive line coach, Glenn Ellerbe, talking, a couple of offensive linemen, including Lance Hurd. And Nico, first time he has spoke this spring as Tennessee's starting quarterback. It's kind of surreal that just a couple of years ago we're talking about landing this guy, and now this was what we envisioned. I mean, the redshirt season we all knew was coming. Now it's go time. It's his team. There is no more thinking about how it's going to be. It's here, and that's exciting because Nico seems like he's done everything right. He's put on the weight. His mind seems to be in the right place. Like, I love one quote he had today when they kind of asked him about the Citrus Bowl performance and all the hype that came with that, rushing for three touchdowns and throwing a touchdown against a really good Iowa defense. He's like, yeah, try not to pay too much attention to that. I came here to do a job, and, you know, my job's to go out there and get that done, which is to win a national championship. I mean, that's what he's at Tennessee to do, obviously, to develop as a quarterback further and to be, you know, top draft pick in the NFL. That's his big goal, but he wants to bring a championship to Tennessee. Seems like you got a whole bunch of guys that want to do that. So I thought that was kind of just a fun quote from him, because he wasn't really trying to make a statement, but he just kind of shows where his mindset is. And as far as the offensive line, I thought we kind of knew that this had been put to rest, but I think one of the biggest offseason stories on field, the NCAA stuff notwithstanding, was the move of John Campbell to right tackle with Lance Hurd coming in to play left tackle. All that's happening, of course, because Gerald Mincy, who played right tackle last season, left for Kentucky. So you had to bring somebody in. You bring Lance Hurd in. Interestingly, he said that moving to left tackle wasn't like what the reason that he transferred to Tennessee. Honestly, he really, and who knows there what all was said and done. That was a storyline pretty early on when Tennessee was pursuing him. He said he didn't really know anybody here that well, to be honest. He just felt like it was the best place for him, which I think says a lot about Tennessee, because he didn't have some crazy connection here. But, you know, you move him to left tackle. He says it didn't matter. John Campbell seemed like he wanted to stay there. We saw the tweets from him early in the offseason before he kind of accepted it, and he should accept it because look what it did for Darnell Wright and his draft stock. That's John Campbell today about it, and he didn't really make a big deal about it. He said the transition went smooth, and most importantly, he's like, I just want to do whatever I can to help this team win. So a lot of this stuff that we've seen in the past, and I think there's been players that aren't at Tennessee anymore that wanted to play some certain positions or wanted to do things a certain way, and they were kind of putting that before the team. It doesn't feel like that's the case anymore. It feels like kind of team-wide, it's whatever we got to do to help this team win, to get to where we want to go is the mindset. And that's, you know, that's kind of been the culture for a couple of years under Heupel, but you've just had a couple of guys that didn't seem to be pulling in the right direction. We saw, like I said, some of those guys hit the portal this offseason and they're not there anymore. You kind of know who those guys are. I mean, the more that you get into this thing, the more you can see what Heupel wants to build and how, even with that 2022 season, as fun as it was, that wasn't the ceiling under Heupel, and that wasn't the goal under Heupel, and that was just kind of like proof that, okay, this concept works, but we really haven't gotten going yet. That's kind of what the vibe is to me. Like, okay, this is year four. I don't know what's going to happen this season. We'll see. It's way too early to predict anything. We don't know who's going to be healthy and who's not going into the season, what depth charts will look like, if more transfers happen. I mean, we'll obviously talk about that as we get closer to September. But it really feels like this is the Tennessee that Heupel envisioned when he took this job. And it's taken him 3 years to kind of get the pieces in place. But he's got his quarterback. He's got some really good defensive players. Really excited about the defensive line. You got some dudes there. I mean, there's a clip of Jackson Moy, the Stanford transfer. I don't know how you
saw this.
Interpret this. Your take on this, maybe. Vyson Lane got beat on that rep, and that's one of the guys competing for the left guard spot. It's one of the biggest spots up for grabs on this team. Really fun to see Jackson Moy doing that, because he just makes that defensive line even better. But hopefully that's not a sign of things to come at left guard. But overall, it's just the vibes. Everything feels, like a championship program should. And that, look, that doesn't mean they're going to win a national championship this season. Again, it's far too early to predict that, but you've got to have what Tennessee has in place right now. You have to have to compete for a championship. That's not negotiable. It's got to be that way, especially in college football.
It does really feel like this season is going to be kind of the culmination of what Heupel has been leading to. Does that mean it's going to be like a national championship season? We'll see exactly how good this team looks, especially with Nico at the helm. But I think, as you mentioned, it is a bunch of, you know, guys that Heupel brought in, really kind of shaped in his image, so to speak. And you know, you've beaten the NCAA stuff and all that garbage, and now you can finally be have the program that you've wanted to have all of this time. And obviously to hear the culture that they've built with these players, you know, with comments like, I just want to do what's best for this team and not just be like, I need this glory, put me a left tackle. I want to be the guy protecting the blind side, 'cause that's a dude that makes a lot of money in the NFL, that type of stuff. It's great. And I think it kind of makes the press conferences so far in spring ball a little bit more consequential than the actual practices themselves. Now, with that said, you've seen some really fun clips, specifically of Chris Brazel, Braylon Staley at wide receiver, obviously Nico. A lot of people saying, oh, it looks like Nico's bulked up. He's bulked up. And I think he has.
What did he say, like 215 or something?
Yeah.
He was 190 when he got to campus. That's a pretty significant amount.
Yes, man. If you could combine the way that he just glides and his touch on the football and give this man some more bulk, we might have a special player on our hands, folks. But all the way around, I'm encouraged by all of it. Keep everybody healthy. No injuries.
They have. I mean, we did see Caleb Beasley, true freshman corner, got fractured his fibula, but FallQuest reported that he's supposed to be okay by fall camp, August. So hopefully, because that's a talented player. I mean, sometimes you got to play freshman corners more than you want to. At times, we kind of wish they would have in the past a few times. That could be a player that you need and count on this fall. Sucks that he doesn't get to go through spring practice, because those are reps that he really needed. But at least he's still going to be around the program and get the idea and the concepts and be in team meetings. That's important too.
Yeah, just don't let it go much further than that.
No.
Because it's just so important to stay healthy, not have anything devastating during absolute, not meaningless. It's meaningful in the fact that you're practicing as a team, but obviously, you know, it's not an SEC game during the fall either, and you don't want to get hurt during practice. So I'm happy with it so far. And we'll just have to see if anything else comes of it. Again, the spring game is only going to have 10,000 people allowed in. It's not going to be a full thing. A lot of people are going to have to watch it from outside on a TV. And we'll see exactly how they looked in when everything kind of gets presented to the public there. But so far, I like it. It just seems like it doesn't matter who gets added in and what coach it is or whatever. Everybody's just kind of on the same page, speaking the same language, the same message, and it's a solid positivity, and it's a culture that I think Heupel has really spearheaded, and it's impressive. Even if it doesn't turn into a national championship, I think I'll always kind of be impressed by that element. It's refreshing.
And we talked about this positivity and stuff, and I hope people don't get that twisted with it's kind of super laid back all the time and anything goes, because there is discipline. In fact, Taven Jackson, that had been at Tennessee before, that transferred to Indiana, he spent the 2022 season at Tennessee. Thanks a lot to Josh Heupel and his former teammates. He was on a podcast, an Indiana podcast, and they asked him, you know, what the differences were in Indiana and Tennessee. And he didn't really say anything too controversial, not that I expected him to. But he did say that Josh Heupel was more strict than Tom Allen, his former coach, who just got let go at Indiana. So, well, that's an interesting comment to throw out there, because you hear all this positivity stuff and you don't really think of Heupel as strict, but it just shows that balance is there. Like, he's not Nick Saban. He's not Kirby Smart. He's not this, you know, intense, scream in your face. You're not going to hear these crazy recordings of him floating around the internet. But at the same time, he does have rules that are in place. He does hold people to a standard. He holds players to a standard, his staff to a standard. So all that discipline, it's there. It's just not there in the same way that, like, it is or was at Alabama under Saban. It's not that, or what Jeremy Pruitt tried to make it at Tennessee and failed, because you got to be true to who you are and the way you do things. And it seems like that's what Heupel does. It's who he's been since his days at Oklahoma as a player. He's just kind of evolved from that as he's got to Tennessee now.
Absolutely. Well, we'll keep tabs on it and keep talking about it as spring practice goes along. Billy Bob does ask, how was Brew McCoy?
He's expected to be 100% by the fall. He said that during a recent interview, I think last month or earlier this month. He's not a go for spring practice or anything, but he does think he's, you know, supposed to be full go by this fall and back out there being Brew, a very important part of that receiver group, because his skill set is unique and it's something that I think any offense in the SEC really needs. You need that guy that can pick up 6 yards on 3rd and 5 on a screen pass or whatever it is. Like, you get the ball out there in the perimeter and you can take on a DB or two and push forward for those extra yards, and obviously the blocking too that he brings.
Absolutely. So hopefully he gets back to 100% again. No injuries for anybody else. And we'll talk about it more next week. Now, to end the show, I guess we do have to talk brief. Well, we can just mention kind of a shout out to baseball. So far, won the series against Ole Miss, lost the series to Alabama, which is not really not a great series loss, because I think ultimately Alabama is not going to be one of the better teams in the SEC. But
it's baseball.
It is baseball. And it was in Tuscaloosa. Offense, amazing. Defense needs work. It's not the best that it could be, specifically the games that they've struggled in conference play so far, the ones where their ace pitcher, pitcher's out. I don't totally get it, but we can kind of cover that more when we get a little further into the season. We can end with a little Lady Vol basketball. You lost tonight. There's been multiple comments here. Has Kelly been fired yet? Not to my knowledge. But let's be frank, she should be. That's where you're at.
And it's not like you've already done this once. You fired Holly Worley. I mean, you've done this. You've been down this road before. It's not like this huge dramatic thing where you've got to let this former player go. I mean, it's the standards of the program are what they are, and they're not being met. Not that anyone thinks that the program will ever return to what Pat Summitt had it at. I think that would be, you know, doing a disgrace to the memory of Pat Summitt to even suggest that can happen, because she was on such a different level, something we'll probably never see again. And that's just the way it is. I mean, if it happens again, then great. You can't put that on somebody. At the same time, like, losing in the second round shouldn't be, yeah. Like, that's the response. It's just, okay. Like, there is no, it's not, that should be a huge upset. That should be a massive, like, oh my goodness, Tennessee's not that of this thing. Somebody's path got a little bit easier. And that's just not the way the program is viewed right now. You got to do something to bring some of that back. And at this point, we've seen it from Kelly Harper. She's the same coach that she was at NC State. It's who she is. I mean, her team, I think her teams like her. I think her teams, we've seen them play hard at times. They almost beat South Carolina. I mean, they should have beat South Carolina. But a coaching malpractice at the end of that game prevented you from winning that game against South Carolina. So it's just like, there's things that are good about Kelly Harper. It's not like I want to slam the coach she is, but she's not at that elite level by any means. And if you're a Lady Vols fan, is that good enough? Are you okay with that? Because I think if you're expecting it to somehow turn around or for her to turn this corner, you're really going to be let down, because you're just going to keep hoping and hoping and hoping. And it's just going to get worse, if anything, it feels like.
The folks that I don't understand personally are the real diehard, longtime Lady Vol fans that are hanging on. And I say that as a longtime, serious Lady Vol fan. I say it almost every time we have this conversation. Had season tickets my entire life growing up. My dad blessed us with that. Got to watch Pat Summitt up close and personal for years and years and years, hundreds of games. I saw that standard. I saw the way she coached. I saw her fundamentally sound teams that were coached hard but also loved, and just that amazing balance that she had of being the most intimidating person I have ever seen And also, like, a kind soul that truly cared about their players. Like, she was on a different plane of existence, truly. And, you know, now has a statue in her honor outside of the arena. But I'm not asking for that. I think I said that last week. I said exactly this last week after the terrible loss to South Carolina. And it's even worse now because, I mean, it's you lost to a worse team in NC State. And it's your former employer who already fired you. And it's just bad all the way around. And I'm not asking you to be bad. I'm not asking you to show up and to have a career that ends in a statue being erected in your honor. That's not what I'm asking. I'm asking to lose, I don't know, 8 games a year instead of 13. Not even that. That's not even a high enough standard. That's a start. It's a start to get back to that point. Mm-hmm. Obviously, haven't had a Final Four in 15 years. Barely ever made Elite Eights. And made it to the SEC Championship last year. But got blown out in that actual game. Truly non-competitive when you play actual elite teams. And that's all I'm asking. I don't need you to come in and reinvent the sport, essentially invent the sport like Pat did. I don't need that. I just need something else. And I will say everybody, I tweeted about this earlier, and there were a lot of most of the responses were like, yes, it's time. I mean, Randy here in the comments, it's time. It absolutely is. But I at the same time got comments that were saying, oh, well, who are you going to go get? That's the most cop-out response. Who are you going to go get? I don't know. Somebody that doesn't lose 13 games a year, though. I don't know. We got a guy over there making millions of bucks with his name on the door of the athletic director's office. And that's his job.
And he's good at it. And he's been historically good at it.
Yes.
Every time someone brings up that who are we going to hire, and I get it. Sometimes that every now and then that's viable, but I think about Georgia and Mark Richt, and he was 10 wins a year. I mean, he's ranked every year. Sometimes
who are you going to get?
And now they've won multiple national championships because they moved on from that guy. Kentucky. I mean, who knows what's going to happen there? Kentucky might be firing, you know, John Calipari if they can come up with $34 million.
Who are you going to get though, Zach? Who?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Kentucky fans are that. They'll find somebody. And no, there's people out there
that
can coach. I mean, it's just one of those things where Danny White, you got to trust him to do his job. Sometimes it's not just a Wikipedia page that you're making these hires based off of. And it's personal touch. It's interviews. It's getting to know these people. What makes them tick? What are their passions? What drives them? What kind of competitiveness do they have, you know, to go out there and win? Those are the things that matter. I think that's what they saw in Josh Heupel. And because we weren't on necessarily like over the moon about that hire. There's things like that, like Tony Vitello, the same way. I know that's John Curry that made that move. But there are you just got to get to know these people. And the answer might not be super obvious. But I think what is obvious is that Kelly Harper has reached her ceiling at Tennessee, and this is as good as it is ever going to get with her leading the program.
Yes, it's hit its ceiling, and unfortunately, the ceiling was not very high. And so, who are you going to get? I don't know. That is not my job. But you lost 13 times this season. Just start with all those teams. They beat you. Ask their coaches and see if they say no. There's a start right there. If it was me getting paid millions of bucks, I'd probably start there. I don't know. yeah, that always bugs me with this one. You are Tennessee. You have a statue to your former women's basketball coach outside of your basketball arena. Honor her legacy by bringing this program back. Thank you. Please and thank you.
It's not a lot different than like UCLA basketball trying to find the guy that brings them back. I mean, people will be interested. You might not get your first choice, but I mean, Rick Barnes, you know, almost left for UCLA one time because of what that program means. Yeah. You don't think there's a really great women's basketball coach out there that holds the Lady Vols program in super high esteem and feels like they should you know, take that job or would be good for it. Like, there's somebody out there that's really good that would love to take over this program and, you know, try to take it back to what, at least close to what it once was. Give South Carolina and LSU somebody to compete with in the SEC.
Absolutely. Oh, that's a show. What was Lou Man talking about in the comments over here? I didn't block you. I just, you're annoying, and I don't listen to anything that you say. I ignore everything you say because you're an annoying
person. Yeah, his other comments are still up there, and he looks like he's logged into a unnecessary burner, maybe?
Yeah, he's now on two accounts. There's Lou Man, it's two, one, one with a capital L and one without. Oh, and two N's. I don't know.
Do what you gotta do there, Lou Man.
I appreciate everybody watching, though. Even Lou Man. He is a Vandy fan.
Congrats on your new coach, by the way.
Hey, yeah, the guy from James Madison.
Yeah.
Who hopefully he can win something better than, is it one out of one game in the last 10 years, I think? Vandy's beaten Tennessee in basketball. So maybe... yeah, you could do maybe better than that. Maybe. Charlie Burris, Zach Reagan, the A to Z Sports Big Orange Podcast. Thank you, thank you, thank you to everybody who tuned in, commented, hung out with us, and watches every week. We could not do without you. Truly, we appreciate it. You know where to find us. A to Z Sports all over the place. Twitter, obviously. Zach is infamous on there at this point. I believe you... we found out Zach or Austin talked to Chris Lowe at the NCAA tournament, and Chris Lowe at ESPN was like, "Oh, Zach Reagan, I know him."
We don't know if it's good or bad yet. So
yeah, that's true. There was no indication of whether he was like, "That's a great Twitter account," or he was like, "Oh, that guy, I blocked him." we don't know which way that went, but. Thanks again for watching, everybody. And we will talk to y'all hopefully next week and win Tennessee's at a Final Four. Please.
We might have to bring out the Rocky Top remix if that happens.
Oh, there will be a Rocky Top remix opening this show if Tennessee makes Final Four. So tune in for that if you want to see that. It only comes out for the special occasions, but it will for that one. So we will talk to y'all next week.
See you guys later.